Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclend.com. Steven Serta, Cody Tapp, Alex Gold with you 10 to 2 here on 610 Sports Radio. I guess we're going to have a very serious conversation later in the show. Something just popped up during the break. I didn't know you were so you can maybe be so passionate about it with surveys that are out about quarterbacks and players in the AFC West and the entire National Football League based off attractiveness. We know your thoughts on the 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, now there's a survey.
I think Smith got his credit. That's all.
You just wanted it for Alex Smith. You were backing up your guy. Apparently, there's surveys that exist for everything, as we should know by now. But Mahomes was voted the most attractive player in the AFC West, apparently. Address that later.
I mean, it's giving him a lot of credit. There are a lot of handsome men. I don't think I'd want to go that high. We can talk about it later. I don't want to get too far into it.
No.
We're one day closer to the Super Bowl.
And one day closer to Miami, with, by the way, this weather we're having is just fantastic here. And it's going to be about 75 degrees and sunny here in a few days. Think about that. As Mahomes did say at his press conference, like, I hope he's ready to go. He'll know he's in Miami when he's sweating when he gets off the airplane.
Well, that would be a big difference.
You know I'm wearing shorts on the airplane Sunday morning. It might be 25 degrees here in Kansas City when we take off at 5 in the morning on Sunday. But to me, when you land in Miami, it's required. You have to wear shorts, right, when you get in there. Like, you just have to get in the mindset.
So you're suggesting I wear shorts on the plane knowing I will eventually end up in Miami?
Yeah.
I don't really care. I mean, it's fine.
I'm not getting off the plane sweating. I want to be comfortable.
Reasonable. Totally fair. I'm looking forward to being there, but I'm not worried about my attire going in.
Okay. Chiefs gear?
No.
No.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Okay. I have not gotten this far. I have not gotten far enough down the road on this to really give you an adequate representation.
I'm ready to go. I mean, the suitcase might as well be packed at this point.
Like, it's already packed?
The suitcase is out. It's not packed. The suitcase is out. I've got the clothing ready to roll. Trying to figure out how many days I'm going to be stuck with you and I in the same roof and seven other people.
No, I have not gotten... I'll pack this weekend. I'll pack Friday, probably. So tomorrow. So I'm not that far off, but I'm just not there yet.
It's going to be... This week has flown by as we get set for Super Bowl 54. And a reminder, today in the 11 o'clock hour, we're expected to hear from Dave Tobe, Eric Bieniemy, Steve Spagnuolo, also Tyrann Mathieu. So we'll have that coming your way today on the show. And also a chance in about 25 minutes or so, our national cash contest, next chance at $1,000. Cody will have your code word for that. But the thought around Kansas City and the 49ers at this point in time, and I wonder if there is a need for either team to have a faster start than the other. Like, we realize, ideally, you have a quick start, you get up on your opponent. That doesn't matter what sport we're talking about. But we've seen from Kansas City the 24-0 deficit. They were down 17-7 this past game against the Tennessee Titans. So do the Chiefs need to start fast compared to a 49ers team, for example? And I remember Bill Belichick even last year was talking about the Chiefs and fast starts. And he said, quote, there is, I think, historically no better fast-starting team than the Chiefs. And specifically talking about Coach Andy Reid's always done a great job of that. A year ago, this Chiefs team outscored their opponents more than anybody else in the first quarter. It was a top three, I think it was, in the first quarter.
It was by better than 100 points over the course of a season, so a pretty sizable gap.
We fast forward to this year, and I won't say it's the opposite. First quarter hasn't been as strong, but it's been all about what? The second quarter is the biggest strength of this team and going forward. But really, the second quarter has been that magical quarter. We've seen it firsthand here in the postseason as well. So do the Chiefs need to start fast based on what we know about this team this year and what we know about the San Francisco 49ers.
No. No. Yes, I know the 49ers are a better team. Yes, I know that the team is going to say, oh, we don't want to keep getting behind. But do they absolutely have to start fast in order to win this game? No. You already gave the stat of the runs the Chiefs go through. They've had a 41-point run, a 31-point run, a 24-point run, a 27-point run, all consecutively to go with it. It's been kind of an odd year. The reason why they don't start fast is because of Patrick Mahomes. It's fairly simple. We gave you the stat that they're 500 in games in which they're down by 10 or more, where the rest of the league would only be about a 14%. Now, I'm not saying you want to be in a 50-50 game, because certainly if they have the lead, he has a better than 50% winning percentage, because his winning percentage across the league is far superior to that. Jimmy Garoppolo's winning percentage, by the way, is really good as a starter, too. He's 23-5, which is the greatest 28-game start, I think, for anybody. So I'm not saying that you can't, you don't want to get behind. Obviously, you prefer to just play from ahead. But this team has proven over and over and over again they can play from behind. They've shown it consistently to go with it. And I know, because it's been kind of weird. You mentioned last year's fast starts. This year hasn't been that at all. And Andy is notoriously given a lot of credit for what he's able to do in the first 15. And yet still, we see stumbles. In these first two playoff games, we see stumbles. All season, we see stumbles. And the funny thing is, I don't actually think that has anything to do with Mahomes. It seems like the rest of the gears are out of track. Last two playoff games, it's just been drops that have gotten him there. But they are so good quarter two, three, four.
Could I add the last three? Matter. Could I add the last three playoff games slow starts? I mean, really, if you think about it, go back to the AFC Patriots title too. Game against the Patriots. Now, we all know the second half was a completely different story, much like as we have seen in these playoff games. So I don't know if it's just a weird anomaly here with it, but the first quarter, for whatever reason, in playoff games, the last three under Andy Reid, even with Mahomes, it has been, whether it's just one drive, whether it's a quarter, it's been a little slow.
But it was all this year. They were outscored in the first quarter this year. That's weird. For a Chiefs team that nearly set a record in how quickly they got in front of teams last year, they're outscored in the first quarter of games this season, including the first two games of this playoffs, right? No different there. It was a bit bizarre to me that they put themselves in that position again, but it's the same thing. It doesn't look like I want to say like it's weird because the first 15 thing, but to me, it's funny. I don't actually think that's the problem most of the time, except for this last. So against the Texans, I didn't feel that way at all. It was drop, drop, block, punt, drop, drop, and you're like, okay, this is a disaster. The Chiefs have 9 drops already in 2 games this postseason. So as great as Patrick Mahomes has been, and according to Pro Football Focus, this would be the greatest 2-game start to a postseason in history, according to EPA, which is just play efficiency, and according to just their personal ranking, right? So they would already have been one of, this would be an incredible run on top of the drops. But the last week was the first week I saw from Andy, which were, like, Serta and I were sitting in the press box together. And the first three plays, you're like, what the hell are these, like, design rollout? What is this look that he thought he was going to see that he wasn't going to see? And then later in the game, and the same thing, you're like, oh, this is gross. But somewhere in that first 15, it still works. Because when they get stopped in the first quarter, it's like half of their scripted plays. So the first 15 of some part of Andy still works. I just don't think that, you know, I think you guys maybe feel a little bit different because I think the 49ers are good. But
yeah, that's where I'm at on it for the most part. Yes, Mahomes, no lead is too bad. You know, too big for him to come back from. That is 100% accurate. You would be foolish to think that after seeing what has occurred this postseason and seeing his play that this team can't come back from down multiple touchdowns and all that. And obviously we all recognize that it's not ideal by any means. But I do think there's a difference not only at the quarterback spot and the Niners as a team as a whole defensively, but also the coaching. I mean, I'm just talking about the last two games. And Mike Vrabel, I think, is a very good coach. But that offense still was fairly limited. That defense wasn't near the level of the San Francisco 49ers. Go back to the Texans game as well. Bill O'Brien and Kyle Shanahan aren't on the same planet either. So I think I'm just looking more about the opponent this go around. Yes, am I going to be panicking if they're down 10-0 early? Not any more than I would just because it's the Super Bowl. But versus any other team, would you feel better Mahomes down 10 or any other quarterback? Of course, you'd give me Mahomes in that scenario based on what we have seen. However, I just look at Kyle Shanahan I know he's the guy that we just got done talking about blowing a 28-3 lead when he was an offensive coordinator, and he spoke a lot about that yesterday at his press conference. We listened to that a little bit this morning, and that was what a bulk of the questions were about. And he still feels like he called the game the right way, and that he, you know, you couldn't just run to end that game. So he's blown leads. Maybe that's something that, if Kansas City is down, that'll allow Chiefs fans to feel better about it. Not only with Mahomes, are going to say, "Wow, teams have come back on a team involving Kyle Shanahan before." But whatever, you need to feel good about it. But I just look at that defense of the 49ers and the way this team still is coached overall with the weapons that they have. I don't think, certainly, and you disagree with me on this, 24-0, if you're in that kind of hole against a 49ers team in a Super Bowl, yeah, I don't know how you think they come back in that scenario.
They did get down 7-3 to the Patriots, which is the only defense that ranked above where the 49ers are this year. Oh, and then they ripped off 20 straight points. And I know that, you know, start slow is relative. I think that that really relates to the first quarter. I think you could argue that start slow is a first half just based on the fact that that's what the slow start was against the Patriots last year in a game that they eventually led and had the advantage. So I'm not saying that it can't extend further beyond that. But still, they've consistently started slow this year. It seems to be a staple of this team. Over and over and over again, you know, against even poorer quality opponents. Even that Raiders game, when they scored 28 in the second quarter, that first quarter was like, ugh, this team kind of looks meh. Like, nothing looks like
all
it's
the way back
in rhythm.
Was it week two, I think it was?
Yeah, things didn't look in rhythm, and it just kind of fell off a little bit. And he was hurt, essentially, right away from the immediacy of that, and that might have something to do with it. But I honestly don't think it's part of the first 15 issue. I think so much of it is just it seems like everyone's got the yips in the early part of the game. And then maybe the first couple of plays of Andy the last time, he thought he had something. And obviously that was not the case there in that early going. But it doesn't necessarily scare me that they can't, that they have started slow, because I haven't seen, I mean, they're not getting down 24-0 and probably winning against the 49ers, although I wouldn't put it at a 0% chance. But, you know, that kind of slow start, this 10-0, it doesn't factor into where I think this team ends up in the end, because the 49ers are a good offense, but getting in shootouts kind of changes where your mindset goes into those games.
Typically, in big games, and certainly the Super Bowl is that, you sometimes see in the discussion, at least heading in, is, all right, team's going to be tight heading into a game. This is a Chiefs team. It won't even be the narrative would be, oh, they came out tight. Let's say they start slow. They came out tight, but as you've said, this is a team that has started slow in this postseason, and at times throughout this season has started slow across the entire first quarter. But in a Super Bowl, a lot of times you see both teams come out tight. And we're looking at the Chiefs, dude. They need a fast start. I will say the difference because of the quarterback spot. The 49ers, it's more important that the Niners start fast than the Chiefs. I'll give you that. Like, I think it's very important Kansas City starts fast because of your opponent being what they are. They're in the Super Bowl for a reason. But I definitely think it's far more vital for the 49ers to get a fast start than Kansas City, just based off what we've seen because of Patrick Mahomes and the offense as a whole. Like, and we know they can come back from slow starts, whereas the 49ers haven't been in these massive holes like Kansas City has throughout the postseason at times and come back from it. We haven't seen them being capable to do that. And, heck, we were just talking earlier in the week, and we'll get back into it, I think, with Ross Tucker, who's going to join us. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo throwing the ball 8 times, and after that interception, the Vikings, do you think they don't trust him as much? Like, so if that's if we're wondering about them trusting their quarterback, it is much more vital for Jimmy G and the Niners to have the fast start than it is for Kansas City.
Of course it is. Just because, as good as their offense is, or has been this season, and we pointed out that they've actually scored more points this year than the Chiefs, they didn't have 2 games without their starting quarterback. They've gotten Jimmy G for a full season, which is wild, for the first time in a long time. They only really had to win a single shootout. Not to say they didn't put up points. They dropped 51 against the Panthers earlier this year. They put 37 on the Packers. They obviously scored pretty good against the Packers again later in that year. They've been a high-scoring team at times. They've also been in some weirdy low-scoring games. And getting down to the Chiefs forces you to play a certain style. We saw it from the Titans. The Titans only handed the ball off 3 times in the second half. That is way different than what is their normal plan, and even different than how they handled the regular season matchup where they kept going to the ground with Derrick Henry. This time it wasn't working with Derrick Henry, so they weren't able to keep doing that, which means the 49ers could keep trying to run it, which they're a good running team. They can keep trying to run it, but if you get stopped a couple of times and you're down and it's 3rd and 7 and you go to the air and you get stopped once, then in the next drive the Chiefs put another field goal on the board, then the pressure to pass builds. The Chiefs pass anyway. That's what is so lovely about when they're down, is that even when they're down, they don't have to alter anything they do just simply based on the fact that this is what they do anyway. That is different than most teams in the league. Their offense doesn't really change much down 17 or up 17 unless it gets to be around run out the clock time and Andy's trying to like get through this thing in the fourth.
Fast start or not, I don't think either team, if one gets the faster start than the other, I don't see this being a game where either's blowing out the other. And that's why I was so surprised. Bleacher Report's Mike Freeman wrote a piece yesterday that he says he's talked with 3 assistant coaches and 2 front office executives. All of them pick the Chiefs, and not just pick the Chiefs, but big. I hear that, and based on my thoughts and respect for the 49ers, I will be stunned if this game is a blowout. I mean, the Chiefs are favorites. They're, what, -1.5 in this game? Last check this morning, I've been trying to check every single morning to see if it's switched, and yesterday we mentioned it did go to 1.5, which is as big as it's been since the line opened on Sunday after both teams won. So that goes completely against what Vegas thinks. It's the idea that there's coaches around the league and front office executives that think the Chiefs win big. Freeman said he's stunned. I think the confidence out there from executives, and who we don't know who are these, you know, are these assistant coaches that have once worked with Andy Reid? Are these guys that are close to Andy Reid? Are these front office executives that have ties to Andy Reid or have front office executives that have faced the Chiefs? I'm not saying it's completely irrelevant, and who knows? Maybe they know something we don't, but I just don't think fast start equates to blowout win for either team, and certainly not necessarily just for the Chiefs either.
I don't see a way that it's a blowout. Freeman's not wrong for saying he's surprised, and obviously that's in a report from Bleacher Report saying those assistants and coaches and execs think it is. You know what I think it is? Favoritism. Come on, we're in Kansas City. We all chose the Chiefs to beat the Titans. We were right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that at least 90% of the station, 95% of the station is going to be picking the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
I'll say it's probably going to be 100%.
I don't think it's 100% because I'm not 100%. Like, I'm not 100% picking the Chiefs right now. I know that now because I think this game is that close. And Serta,
I know, is leaning more Niners. But you said you can talk yourself into both back and forth 100 times before we get to Sunday, right?
Yeah, because I think that the Niners were the one team left in the postseason who can genuinely match up with the Chiefs in multiple different areas in terms of just sheer talent on their roster. I don't think this game's going to be a blowout. I think that it's going to be a heavily contested football game.
I do too. And that's where, like,
well, I'm not saying it's blowout either.
I know, but like in your head, it's like you've already chosen. Like, I'm in Kansas City. This game's close. I'm choosing the Chiefs.
I've seen what Kansas City's done in facing these last two opponents.
Picking the Chiefs is not lunacy. Yeah. It is a perfectly logical side in which to come. I don't want to make my pick just because I'm based in Kansas City. I'm not saying you are.
I was going to say, let's not act like I'm just picking them because I'm in KC. There are plenty of reasons to pick Kansas City in this football game.
Yeah, but this is all, no, I'm not saying it's just because of that. Because they're in the Super Bowl, it's easy enough to choose either team based on that situation. As I get closer to this and continue to dive into the matchups that I think kind of stunned, but you know, between the two, I think what's happening here with Freeman, why there are so many execs that are willing to pick the Chiefs in blowout fashion more than even we are in the media, is based in favoritism. They love Andy. They love Andy. Andy's their guy. And if they're going to root for somebody in this game, not that they don't like Kyle Shanahan, people love Andy. And they watch Patrick Mahomes versus Jimmy Garoppolo, and in their head, it's only those two things. And I think Serta's right. I think these rosters are really close. And there are people in the text line. Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer text line, 69306. Stop the run. They can't hang. You know, it's more important they get up early. The Chiefs can't catch up. People aren't necessarily worried about that either. There's a lot of people that would be on that side of the situation. I totally understand it. I think so much of that, like, if there really are people that think this is a blowout, I think a lot of that comes from the Andy part. And I'm not even sure the reason why I might lean towards Chiefs right now. Like, if you ask me today which way I'm leaning, I am leaning Chiefs. And that's because I'm not sure that 2 weeks is enough time to get ready for Mahomes anyway. And that's all because, like, I read an article from The Athletic this week just talking about how teams in the AFC West have been spending 365 days a year, essentially, trying to figure out the best way to combat Mahomes, which actually isn't the worst plan. That's from Michael Lombardi, who we've had on, right? He's a Radio.com insider. I don't think, like, if you're trying to figure out how to beat the Chiefs for the next 10 years, you probably ought to start with Mahomes and how to slow him down. And I'm not so sure the 49ers can figure out a good, successful plan in that short of amount of time to do it. Not that teams don't beat them in an individual week, because that happens. But I think to, like, give Andy 2 weeks to figure out what he wants to do, I think to try to do the reverse and dissect what Mahomes does is really hard.
It's been the, to some extent, what people for years have been, I mean, in that AFC East have been trying to do to catch the New England Patriots. Now, this is a different scale. I think you look at just athletic ability with Brady versus Mahomes and everything like that. It's a whole different ball game. And this was a story down during the Senior Bowl right now. That's where I think this piece came from. I think Michael Lombardi is down there, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he was talking to some executives down there, and the thought of truly building rosters going forward to try to limit and control Patrick Mahomes and therefore keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs. And as you said, doesn't mean that teams aren't capable of beating the Chiefs. Of course they are capable, but the bigger picture kind of stuff where if you all of a sudden you look at what the Patriots have done, if you're winning your division, if Kansas City's winning the AFC West every single year and it goes from winning it 4 years to all of a sudden they've won it 8 years in a row, like that automatically is getting you a home playoff game, and it's going to put you in a position to have a bye almost every year. Potentially,
you have a 1-4 like shot.
That's been the formula for the New England Patriots. Right? Your road is a hell of a lot easier. It's not rocket science here. If you're getting a bye week and if you're getting home games in the playoffs, we all know that. History tells us that time and time again. So, yeah, that's the right route to go. To me, it's not so much just about Mahomes, but it's something that even Therese said. He was on Fesco in the morning looking at Andy Reid. Like, to me, is 2 weeks enough time to plan for the Chiefs because of Reed, even more so than Mahomes?
One thing I will tell you guys, and that you can absolutely take this to the bank, Andy Reid has been waiting for this game for 15 years, okay? He's been waiting for a chance to get back to the Super Bowl for 15 years. So, you get the good plays on Sunday, okay? But that's coming. Know that. There's stuff that they've been setting up all year long, guys. And I think the fact Andy's done it, guys, he's had 16 years. Andy's had 16 years to think about what he'd do differently in the Super Bowl. It'd be unfathomable if he doesn't have some special stuff for it. It'd be unfathomable if he hasn't thought this through and planned it out. He's facing a team that was 4-12 last year. That's a good team with a really good coach, but it's a team with a younger coach, too. So if you're the Chiefs and the Chiefs fans, you got to hold that you get a little of that Bill Belichick, Sean McVay effect from last year, right? Like maybe you can show him something he hasn't seen being a veteran head coach. I fully expect the best of Andy Reid. This is a chance to solidify his legacy. He's had 16 years to think about it.
And so to me, it's not just 2 weeks to plan against Mahomes. It's 2 weeks to plan against Andy Reid. And I know that's not a typical bye week. I listened to his press conference. He said exactly what Andy Reid said. They're getting all their game plan stuff normal week this week because they know everything, the media obligations and everything that takes place next week down in Miami. And it's not that they don't want to be playing catch up or anything. That's what both coaches essentially had said. But you heard from Therese there, like, this is 16 years in the making kind of thing. There's no way that you're not getting the best of Andy Reid here, just in terms of things that he's been setting up for weeks and months, potentially.
Obviously, he said for coaching yesterday, it's not as big of a detriment as it is for some of the players. But I'd say it's more like a week and a half. It's not a bye week, Andy. It's like 1.5. It rides somewhere in the middle because of the things they're doing. I just don't know that you can come up with your best plan for Patrick Mahomes in 2 weeks.
Our NFL postseason coverage brought to you by Twin Peaks in Olathe and Independence. Eats, drinks, and scenic views. Coming up next, our national cash contest, a chance at $1,000, and suspensions now handed out from the Sunflower Showdown.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold, Vahe Kagorian of the Kansas City Star going to join us at 10:45. We'll get his thoughts. He's out at Arrowhead. We'll get his thoughts on what he's seen this week in his discussions with some of the Chiefs players out there and his latest column. That's coming up in just a little bit. But first, Cody's got your code word in our national cash contest.
1,000 on the 30s here on 610 Sports Radio. Text the code word KID to 72881. That's KID, K-I-D. You could be a $1,000 cash winner in the National Cash Contest. 610 Sports Radio, the only sports radio station in Kansas City. Your chance at $8,000 each weekday. Just listen on the 30s. Next chance coming up at 11:30. We had a $1,000 winner. We want another $1,000 winner. So please, please, please text KID, K-I-D, to 72881. We'll have another chance again for you at 11:30.
You'll want to hear what Mike Florio suggests the 49ers do to Patrick Mahomes in Super Bowl 54. That's coming up in about 5 minutes. But the punishments are out. Punishments are out for the Sunflower Showdown. Sylvia DeSosa gets 12 games. That coming from the Big 12 office. David McCormack, 2 games. Those are the two KU players that had suspensions from all that brawl, melee, whatever you want to call it from the other 9. James Love, 8 games for Kansas State. Antonio Gordon gets 3 games. If you remember, Love was the Kansas State player that came off the bench. He was in street clothes, essentially, yeah. And then DeSosa, of course, we, you know, most people viewed him as the main agitator, I guess, aggressor. Fair or not, that's at least how people perceived it based off the photo that's gone all over and really the lasting image of the brawl. And so we talked yesterday even about what we thought it would be. I thought it was maybe max 7 games or so. You said you thought it would be more than the 7. It ended up being more than the 7. It ends up as 12 games. Essentially, the most, if not all, the regular season. There's, like, I think, 13 games left in the regular season for Kansas, in the Big 12 regular season, that is. They play Kansas State at the end of February in Manhattan. The Love kid for Kansas State is not even medically cleared yet, so his suspension will not start till after. Who knows if he even plays at all this year or potentially even long-term ever for Kansas State, quite honestly. I will say this, I was surprised only 4 guys got suspended, but maybe, again, the conference had all these angles, and they said, the people that left the bench, most of them maybe were truly trying to calm things down instead of giving them the automatic, you know, 1-game suspension for just leaving the bench and being ejected for that. So I was a little surprised it was just 4 guys. I thought there would be more involved, but clearly they felt differently on that. So did the punishment fit? I think the problem for DeSosa that he ran into, the reason why it's 12 games and not in that 7 or 8 game range.
The stool?
Is that there was an image of him holding a stool. And I understand people are going to be saying, hey, but he dropped it. He dropped it, or someone took it from him. I understand that. But that's the image that the conference has had people show over and over the last 24 to 48 hours. That was his issue. That was the biggest issue there.
I'm still surprised to send a message. 12. We've watched Oklahoma State not that long ago got in a fight a few years ago that involved fans, and they only got 6. To me, it's more than I thought it was going to be, but maybe this is their way of finally trying to send a message about it. Because if you don't harshly punish people for these things, they will continue to happen. And I think they will continue to happen anyway, but 12 games, I mean, it is still just a fight. I know he picked up a stool. I tried to reiterate this yesterday. Like, it's still just like young people fighting. Not that we should encourage that behavior. Not that I wouldn't be in trouble if I got in a fight. We already established that Serta had been in some fights. 12 games still somehow seems a little high to me, considering the circumstances. Love maybe a little high with 8.
I just think it's because of the amount of, I think it's because of the attention that this got.
Mitch Lightfoot was just kicking it on the side in his gear, like, nowhere to be. Hands in his pocket, watching a fight, be like, damn, I guess those guys are fighting. It's cool, guys. I'm just going to kick it here. You enjoy yourselves. So Love certainly didn't have to get himself involved. I'm glad that they didn't go overboard. You were thinking at first that they might just be giving like a game to everybody essentially in this brawl. And really, they just penalized the 4 largest instigators of the fight. They gave DeSosa more games for a stool, which doesn't seem that unreasonable to me.
My thought, though, with DeSosa and the impact, though, just if we're talking on the court for both of these teams, like for Kansas State, this is a team that's in rebuild mode. One of the guys, James Love, hasn't played. He's been hurt. Like, the impact on the actual team isn't that great. It's more embarrassment on both teams. DeSosa's averaged like 2.5 points this season. It's a depth thing. Where it becomes interesting, though, with McCormack being out 2 games, is if they have to burn the red shirt on Lightfoot, which would be so unfortunate for him because this is his senior season, and he redshirted. He wouldn't have a full senior season anymore. He would have to be put
in
action.
They'd be a better team in the...
Yeah, but that's...
They'd be a deeper team for a championship.
They would, but that'd be terrible for him that he's missed all these games because he's been redshirting, and all of a sudden, and come February, he all of a sudden is playing on the back end. Yes, it would be selfishly good for them this year, but that would hurt him and the program long-term a little bit as well. So that to me, has a bigger potential impact than any of this other stuff. DeSosa did take to Twitter, and I thought he had a really good statement that he sent out, just apologizing, saying, you know, obviously he can't do that, and he apologized to KU fans and to those and to Kansas State as well. I thought he, you know, handled it the right. I actually think both coaches, both programs, players, post-fight, handled it about as good as you could.
Weber was the only guy I'm a little like.
Yesterday when he tried to say his players, were on the court because they thought the game was over.
But also, I understand why he handled it that way. He made it look like Kansas was the more guilty party. And if you're in charge of something, not a bad way to make it look. He let Kansas, like, release statements, their AD release statements, say sorry. And he was like, oh, we're kind of sorry at the time. And then the next day, he's like, yeah, those guys really, really did some stuff. I mean, we were definitely there, and we shouldn't have done some stuff, but those guys really did some stuff, which is not, if you're in charge, not the worst way to handle it, honestly.
So that's over. I think now it's time for people to just completely.
We'll talk to you again about that on 2/29.
That's right. That's when the rematch happens in Manhattan. You know it'll be talked about plenty at that point.
Although, by the way, that 12 games covers that, so DeSosa will not be in that game.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't play a whole lot, probably a good thing. Yeah. Now, he's going to, I mean, when he walks out on the court, though, because he'll still be with the team.
Sure.
Right? I think he can travel. I actually don't know about that, now that I say that.
Normally, though.
But if he can, some of the signs and all that at Bramlage are going to be interesting, to say the least. So the punishment there is handed out. We've seen in the past punishments in the National Football League when coaches have encouraged extra violence. It's a violent sport, but extra violence, as in bounties. We've seen that kind of stuff in the league with Greg Williams and the Saints in the past. Well, yesterday you have a media member, Mike Florio, essentially what I would say suggesting,
advocating almost,
late hits on Patrick Mahomes.
At a certain level, I think that, and I want to be careful here because I'm not suggesting that they try to knock him out of the game. That's not what I'm saying. But at a certain point, you trade the risk of 15 yards if you can send a message. And football is still a physical, violent game. If you can hit him, even if it's close to the sideline, even if he's maybe started into a slide, when the championship is riding on it, I think it's a different analysis. And yeah, we may give up 15 yards or half the distance to the goal line. I mean, that's the thing, Peter. If somebody had blown up Patrick Mahomes inside the five, okay, it goes from the four to the two. Right. Big deal. So again, I'm not saying that that should be part of the deliberate effort, but the Super Bowl is riding on it. And if this guy's going to think that he can just run through the defense without any physical consequence, they need to dispel him of that notion the first time he tries.
I'm not saying punch him in the face, but punch him in the face. I mean, what's the...
That's exactly what you're saying. He wants to say, I'm not encouraging them to get him hurt, or I'm not, you know, I want to be careful here, but I'm not suggesting they try to knock him out of the game, but it's the Super Bowl. that's what he is saying. He is saying that, oh, even if he's sliding, which we know once he starts sliding, you're not supposed to, even while he's sliding, it's okay. Hit him late.
Even if he's a step out of bounds, just hit him. This idea that he's not saying what he's clearly saying is hysterical. By the way, he's taken to Twitter to defend himself. Uh-huh. A lot over the last 30 minutes or so, saying like, oh, they're saying that I was saying that he should hurt and I wasn't going after that, and wrote an entire article, the headline of which on Twitter said some Chiefs fans are a little riled up about the obvious reality that the 49 defensive players may choose to hit Patrick Mahomes hard if he chooses to abandon all quarterback protections. He's not saying just hit him if he's running around like Tannehill. He legitimately says hit him going out of bounds, hit him going to the slide. To hell with personal foul penalties. It's the championship game. Just try to hurt the dude.
Yeah. He didn't say Patrick Mahomes needs to be careful because the 49ers are going to be coming for him. He stated how they should try to injure him.
The exact formula.
And then said, you know, I'm not condoning that type of play, but it's the championship, so they should do it.
Why would you say that? And then again, by the way, in a follow-up to a tweet with someone else, he was like, oh, I guess we can all just live in lollipop land, essentially, where this is not how football players actually think, or we can live in the real world. Again, don't advocate violence against a player in an illegal hit situation, whether you think a player has ever considered doing that before or not. It's one thing, like you said, Serta, to go on the record and be like, look, the 49ers are probably going to be thinking about hitting him. And they might even hit him late because this is a situation. He's legitimately advocating it for that in that clip, is he not? He's saying they should do it because it's the championship. It's wild. That is wild.
Mike Florio, like, especially, and he even mentions it in his article, like, everybody's well aware of what happened in 2012 in the National Football League with Bountygate and the scandal that caused players, coaches, and everybody to have to maybe step away from some of the things that they were once encouraging to a certain point. Yes, it's a violent game. Nobody
said, send a message. That's what mobsters say in movies.
If the 49ers want to send a message, they can send a message when he does run legally. You want to hit him hard when he's legally running or whatever. No, of course that is within the game by all means. In fact, I'm sure that is kind of the thought. But there's a difference.
Tannehill getting crushed by Sorensen. Yeah,
legal play. Nobody's complaining about that. There's nothing wrong with it. But if Mahomes is sliding, essentially saying that it's all right that the Niners, as he's sliding down, you know, while he's sliding, take a shot at him because yeah, you don't want him to get hurt. But it's a Super Bowl. That's exactly what you're advocating.
He's doing mobster lines. He said, send a message. Serta, if we are in the mob together and someone hasn't paid and I say for you to send a message to him, what does that entail?
Break their legs or something?
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, if you're not more specific, that might be what I do.
It's at least that, right? Like you're not going below that. You're not going to be like, dear sir, please pay us our money or bad thing. No, send a message. Specifically suggest, but he gives specific examples in which the 49ers should. I know he twice on that clip tries to be like, look, I'm not trying to say they should hurt the guy, but also here's how they should hurt the guy. You don't get to just say.
No, he said essentially also, so weird. He basically said, not basically, he did say that, well, if it's a situation where the Chiefs have a first and goal and they're inside the five, well, you might as well hit them hard because the penalty is only going to be like 1 or 2 yards. He's saying that that's the best chance to get your shots in because it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to penalize you that much. I'm not saying the 49ers are going to actually do this, but the fact that in the fact that he puts it out there is just so ridiculous.
From the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 69306, he basically did the equivalent of saying no offense before you say something mean to somebody. Look, no offense, but you smell bad. You're like, I take offense. You can't just say no offense. No offense. But
he ends his column, if you want to call it that. For any quarterback who doesn't like that, there's an easy solution. Just don't run the ball.
Sweet solution, Florio.
That's the solution here. He said, it's a far cry from trying to injure Mahomes, who has become one of my all-time favorite players. It's about the fundamental nature of the game, a fundamental nature that has not changed despite the various rule changes. He's saying, like, this is how it's always been. You've always tried to injure the opposing quarterback.
He's saying it's a brutal sport, so it's fine. No, it's not. It's not fine. It's not fine to openly encourage 49ers players to risk getting a 15-yard penalty because who cares? What is it? First and half the distance to the goal because you took a shot as he completed a slide? How can you both do that and then advocate against some of the things he's advocated against, even including players against kids? Don't advocate violence against a player. Like he's not saying hit him because he's running. Patrick Mahomes got hit kind of hard. Not way hard. He got hit kind of hard on that touchdown run, right? They're big men running around, hitting them. All that stuff factors into that decision.
Overall, even
the idea that you're advocating for it is absurd. Absurd.
It is, but at the same time, I don't think, I'm not worried about it. Like the 49, you know, as far as truly when it comes down to it, these don't mean anything. But for someone to advocate, essentially, he can claim he's not advocating for injury. He is. Not send a message, knock him out of the game, basically. No, it's worth it because of the Super Bowl. So, yeah, that guy, as you would expect, his mentions are being blown up by Chiefs fans at this point in time. All right, let's go out to the 610 hotline and welcome in Vahe Gregorian of the Kansas City Star. Vahe, how we doing?
I'm doing great. As I drive through the fog or whatever this is today, it occurs to me in a couple days I'll be in different weather, so I got that going for me.
Yeah, no question.
Where are we
that.
Hitting up in Miami, Vahe? Are you going to have any time at all for one drink?
I don't know. You know, we'll sort of figure that out as we go. I suspect there might be a late night potty or two if once the hay's all in the barn.
There you go. I can appreciate that. That's fine with me. When you know, Vahe, I know that you've written multiple things over the week, but I got to ask you this first. I was considering leaving the show in the middle to go down to try to talk to Matt Moore, but we have a meeting about the Super Bowl in our coverage down there. Are you going to try to talk to Matt Moore today about whatever great story Patrick Mahomes was at least teasing to us yesterday?
I think I will, except for I don't think Matt Moore is going to be at the podium, and you kind of have to pick your poison on whether to be in one place or the other. Mm-hmm. So we'll just kind of have to see. But, you know, to clarify your reference, I mean, that was a little bit about one of the angles I'm just kind of trying to follow up on, as we all are, about, you know, to what degree Andy and Patrick have a little EST or ESPN, whatever you want to call it, going between them. And Patrick basically suggested that Matt Moore had seen them finishing sentences with each other almost as soon as he arrived. So let's see if Matt can describe it for us and create a whole new angle.
Does this week for you, even just being out there around the team, do you get a sense, even just in the building, does it feel different knowing that in a few days they are off to Miami?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I was just thinking about this a little bit. I think because we're all so kind of in the middle of it in the sense of just doing the work or whatever, and that since we're still here, I don't think we fully, at least I'll speak for myself, fully appreciate where we are in this, what this juncture of history even is. And I think we'll feel it a little differently once we're down there in the what surely will be frantic and strange atmosphere of it all. So I feel like you're almost like so much in the eye of the storm that you don't see out right now. And you know, it sounds silly, right? But we're all just kind of trying to stay in our lanes and do the work right now. So you haven't really stepped back and just maybe fully appreciated it. It'll be nice to just get on the plane and go down there and sort of see the spectacle from the beginning. And I think then we start to feel it more in the media, and I think also probably are able to convey it better from on site.
When you're looking at the game itself, Vahe, we had mentioned in the opening segment about the need or not need for the Chiefs to start fast. I don't think it really matters anymore for them just based on what they're able to erase. I know the 49ers would be the best team they've faced in this postseason, but what difference have you seen? You know, this first 15 for Andy this season has been kind of off, generally speaking, as far as how much worse they've been in the first quarter this year than last year. What's been the difference there versus why they've started slow? And do you actually think it matters for this game in particular?
Well, a bunch of good points there. And first of all, you know, I do think it matters, but I don't think it's defining as we've seen these last couple weeks. But shoot, do you really want to spot the other guy 14 or 10 or 17 or 24 and then have to make up for it? I mean, it just changes the complexion of the game. But we've certainly seen that this team needn't be counted out if that happens. What will they be doing to fix that is a good question. Mitchell Schwartz talked about it a little bit yesterday, and I think one of the points he made is that, you know, whatever the calls are, it still comes down to them to execute. And so that's part of it. I think it's also reasonable, though, to say it looks like maybe they've been a little conservative. At least the appearance of the designs of the plays felt a little bit like that. I think mostly right now about the first series last week, you know, Patrick rolling right a couple of times, not looking like he's really looking downfield, and then having Kelce drop a rather short pass, I guess would have been good for a first down. I can't quite remember that. But it didn't seem like it was using the full array of what you might suspect is bubbling up in Andy's repertoire. So I don't know exactly, and I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know if this means they'll find a way to crack the code right away, or if it's just going to be another kind of chess match through the game where they finally find their place.
Vahe Gregorian of the Kansas City Star with us here on Cody and Gold 610 Sports Radio. There was a report out that several assistant coaches and executives around the NFL expect Kansas City to win big against San Francisco. Do you think some of that, Cody was talking about it as well, that some of that's just people wanting to see around the league Andy win so bad, or do you think there's more to it than that?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen that report specifically, so I'm not sure exactly the content, but I do think this. There seems to be a great sentiment around the country for Andy Reid, and part of it is that I think Andy is just such a fundamentally decent guy, a giving guy in a lot of ways, and we see some of that publicly, but not all of it. And he certainly is looked upon fondly in Philadelphia, maybe more fondly now that he's gone from there, because I think it had just gotten kind of stale there. But I grew up in that area, and I can't tell you how many people I've heard from rooting from him, and I think we've also seen that around the country. You know, there's a big Andy Reid tree, and Andy Reid, I think, is known to be a guy who's taken time to mentor other coaches, even if they're not directly on his tree.
think Mike Vrabel last week was speaking about the impact Andy had had on him. So it's not surprising that somebody's been around this long and treats people so well and hasn't had that jewel in the crown is a sentimental favorite. I get that. And I think it also is part and parcel of the fact that he's the sixth winningest coach in NFL history and is missing this. I mean, I think people want to see him have this.
Vahe, thanks as always, man. And yes, just a few more days you can get out of this foggy weather and into some sunshine.
Yeah, and I don't mean to gloat about that. Hopefully your listeners will also appreciate the difference in seeing their Chiefs through that lens once we're down there.
It's okay to gloat, Vahe. It's okay to gloat that you get to be in Miami. It's all right. We'll see you down there, Vahe.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon. That's, okay, see you in a bit.
That's Vahe Gregorian of the Kansas City Star.
Last minute. Fans heading to Miami Gardens Hard Rock Stadium for the Super Bowl will have to leave their grills and tents and elaborate tailgating rigs at home, unfortunately. So not only are Chiefs fans who might be headed to the Super Bowl frustrated with Mike Florio this morning, they're frustrated they won't be able to tailgate the Super Bowl, but I believe that if Chiefs fans had been to Super Bowls prior to this one, they would be aware they don't allow tailgating at any Super Bowls.
They can't make an exception to the rule?
Miami would be perfect weather for it, too. It's going to be in the 70s at kickoff. I'll say this, though. How much of the crowd would actually be out there grilling? I'm not saying there won't be some, but it's a very corporate atmosphere. Ticket prices are nuts. You're spending that much on a ticket. Are you going to really be in the parking lot grilling? Or are you going to want to get in the stadium as soon as the gates open and just soak that moment being in the stadium, walking around?
If I was a fan, I'd get there at 6 a.m. tailgate and then still get in the stadium early.
But it's Miami. You know what? I'll go to the beach. I'll go to a bar earlier in the day. And then I'll get there as soon as the gates open to get in the stadium. I don't know if I want to just stand in a parking lot. I'm in Miami. Do I want to stand in a parking lot, be in the stadium, or go to the beach?
Fine. Tailgating is a Kansas City tradition, and it'll be sad. It won't be there.
It will be weird. You're right. If there was any exception to the rule, do it a year.
KC feels like the one.
KC, there's not many other teams where it would make sense, given the atmosphere of tailgating usually out at Arrowhead Stadium. Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, Donna McNabb and T.O. had some issues perhaps during that run with Andy Reid. Well, do we have any sense that this could crop up in Kansas City?
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.